going to play, Sam?
We're going to play Take Me Out to the Ball Game. We're all going to sing it, too.
And we welcome you into, well, I guess what is basically a Thanksgiving edition of Meet Me at Mutual. I'm your host, Daniel Shoptoff, C70 at the bat, at C70 on Twitter. With me, as always, is Alan Medlock from Red Dirt Redbird and a Medlock1 on Twitter. You know, we're here to talk about what the Cardinals are doing. Cardinals aren't really doing all that much. We'll get into the little bit of activity that we've seen this week with the Cardinals and things like that. And then at the back half of the show, we're going to got to go over the Cardinal Blogger Awards and put our picks in. If you haven't voted, we'll tweet out a link, but you have the opportunity to vote on these as well. So if you agree or disagree with us, feel free to get those out there. The voting ends on Sunday. So by the time you hear this, you should have a link along with the show link to the awards, and we would love to have you participate. So, but we'll get to that in a little bit. Alan, this week, the big deadline, if you will, was that the 40-man roster had to be set to protect people for the Rule 5 draft. And the Cardinals protected three guys. They protected Jake Woodford. They protected Alaris Montero and Alvaro Cejas, which was fine. And they had, you know, they put those three people on the 40-man, but they only had two spots. So Dominic Leon gets the short straw. I'll let you take it from there. What were your thoughts on those?
You know, it's funny. You and I had kind of spoken that, you know, the morning of, and said that I could see something kind of happening on this, be it being a DFA on one of the guys. You know, the two that kind of stick out, and I like both of them, but I was kind of concerned about Leon, and I was concerned about Gant a little bit, just because of the arbitration figures, and they're going to have to trade those out. So I thought that there was a possibility they were going to keep three. You knew the two being Woodford and Montero were going to be the shoe-ins. They were going to have to fit those, and they had room for them already. So that was kind of – that you knew those guys were going to fit. I honestly thought Capel, however you say his name is, I kind of thought that he may be that third member, just because he seemed to impress the organization last year. It was funny, for a good portion of the season, I noticed that he hit third. He hit middle of the lineup for Springfield. And I know that doesn't speak a ton about those guys, especially considering they have, you know, 40 other outfielders that are in play on this. I kind of thought that would be the name that would get that the third spot. I've got to plead ignorance to who they brought on. I know they think highly of him. I looked into it a little bit. You know, Kyle will be able to elaborate a little bit more on that on his prospect list. But I was glad to see I was glad to see him do that. I was glad to go ahead and see him make a move. I liked Leon, but the fit just never seemed great. And I felt like he was probably a goner into the offseason regardless. So it made a lot of sense to me.
Yeah, I mean, I've been writing the exit interviews. If you've been following them at the site, they've been going up this week. And, of course, I write them ahead of time. So I've already written Dominic Leon's. And when I did and dug into his splits and numbers, boy, they were some of the ugliest numbers I have ever seen. And in fact, the one that stood out was with two outs and runners in scoring position, batters had an OPS of 1.836.
Wow.
You know, and at 24 plate appearances, so it wasn't just like one or two, or, you know, there was it's not a huge sample, but it's a sample. And yeah, it just felt like that was a situation that just didn't work. Whether it was injuries, I felt like he was a little bit better last year than, I mean, in 2018, then maybe he was given some credit for it. He had some spots, but, you know, it didn't mesh. And you're right, going into arbitration, you don't want to run the risk of having to deal with a guy like this. You know, they might, I mean, you never know. I mean, they could sign him back for a minor league deal. They could sign him back to something if they wanted to. Probably he's going somewhere else. But it just, that one made a lot of sense. As for Gant, yeah, there was a concern there, but Gant was so good in the first half.
I agree.
He was so bad in the second half, but you know, that was somewhat evening out some part of them not, he overuse, I guess, is what I'm trying to get in the first half, perhaps. But I figured they'll be able to come to a contract agreement with him and not have to worry about arbitration. And
yeah,
he's a guy for next year that you have to keep an eye on.
Well, and exactly. It's one of those. The Gant is a situation to where I felt like he was good enough in 18 for a portion of the season and good enough in 19 for a portion of the season that it warrants probably signing him to a smaller deal to bring him back and gives you a little bit of flexibility if he does have to go to Memphis at some point, you know, without having to go through the waiver process. So honestly, he was just a better pitcher than Leone is as well. It's just one of those to where they just never really worked out. And it's funny, those that's absurd numbers of getting guys out, especially with, in scoring chances. That's ugly. That's kind of how I felt. And you and I think we had talked about it in a previous show to where those were some of the names that we didn't feel like were back. And he was the one that was the most obvious.
Yeah. I mean, they cleared out a lot of the obvious guys, they let Joe Hudson go. And then of course they free up some spots with free agents and things of that nature. So there wasn't much they have to do. Now we'll say the Cardinals 40-man roster is full now. It's at 40. So if they're going to sign a free agent or they're going to have to make a trade, they're going to have to take somebody off of that 40-man to do it. Then again, I don't think anybody expects the Cardinals to be extremely active this offseason. But it does feel like they'll sign somebody, and I don't know that they'll sign them to a minor league deal, but maybe that's all they're going to see. Again, I don't, Gant is safe now. Maybe he's not safe for later if something happens. There's some other guys that could be that way too, but it is just a little interesting to me that they've got it at 40, because a lot of times they leave a spot or two just because they plan to sign free agents, and they didn't do that this year, which probably means just shows how unactive they're going to be in the
market. Yeah, it's not to stutter so much, but it comes out that you're going to look at a situation where it speaks volumes about if they're going to remove clutter, it's going to be complete trade off that 40 man, which can be fun, I'm not so certain. They're in a good spot to say that, hey, we can roll with what we've got, and we're pretty confident in that. Or, hey, we can be opportunistic, and Adam Butler and I were talking on Twitter about this, the Brewers were opportunistic and got Yelich, and the Cardinals maybe putting themselves in a situation like that, and that'd be awesome. But yeah, it's, I feel like the roster is going to look a little bit different. I wouldn't be completely surprised if it doesn't look any different, with guys just going to spring with a chance to win jobs. But I feel like there's a trade to be made in there somewhere.
Well, maybe. A trade, obviously you're most likely taking somebody off the 40 man and trading them anyway. You're not trading on prospects that aren't on the list for somebody that is. I mean, that's just not where the Cardinals are at right now anyway. So yeah, a trade could definitely clear some of those up as well. But we'll see if that happens. As you noted, Connor Capel wasn't protected. Also Max Schrock, who wasn't protected last year either. Seems like both those guys probably are likely to slide through. It's just interesting. The Cardinals didn't think that Cejas would, he's at, Class A Peoria, and he's at Peoria and Palm Beach over this last year. He's not necessarily ranked in the top 100 prospects or anything like that. I'm sure he's on Kyle's 30, 35 somewhere, but I don't know that he's even extremely high on it. But there's a lot of potential there, and I think that's a guy, they've seen, and I think they're a little bit spooked by the fact that, the Padres took, was it Alan Cordoba, and they took Luis Perdomo and people like that they never would have expected to be taken, and then kept them on their roster all year long. And so if there's teams like that, if there's teams like the Marlins, or there's teams like, Baltimore in theory could take a guy like that and not worry about losing or, you know, whatever. But you know, on the other side of that, I don't think that's been great for those players either. And so, you know, I wonder if teams, it's very rare, I think, that teams are going to do that, but I think the Cardinals are getting a little bit snake bit a little bit on that, and protecting people that maybe they didn't need to just yet. Now, given the fact that, you know, it was Leon that went instead of, that's not a big, huge deal, I don't think, but you know, it's possible that they're kind of jumping at ghosts a little bit.
Yeah, they like to stockpile those power arms. You know, that probably played into the factor too, or that was a factor that played into it as well. It, you know, hold one of those guys that can move quick and maybe strike out some guys late in the season for you, and keep it out of an opposing bullpen for a guy like, that's a good point for a team like Baltimore that could probably throw you in a bullpen now with nothing to lose, you know. So, you know, you're right. I mean, it's some of the mindset and some of these moves are incredibly interesting to me. You know, I'd like to hear a little bit more about why you choose player A over to player B and whatnot. Yeah. So,
yeah, it's kind of interesting. One thing we probably should go back a touch on before we forget about it, because it happened since we did a show last. But Mike Schilt was named Manager of the Year in the National League, beating out Craig Counsell and a host of others. And I thought that was kind of interesting. You know, there was a lot of argument last year about he could have had a chance last year with the way the team played in the second half, especially in July and August. But it was kind of interesting to see that he got rewarded for that this year. To get the Cardinals back at the playoffs was enough to get him, enough votes across the board. I think Craig Counsell had more first place votes. And to be fair, you know, for the Brewers to hang around again like they did this year, I don't think you could have gone wrong with Counsell, but it was nice to see Mike Schilt get that honor this early in his career.
It was. I was, I'm a Schilt guy. I mean, anybody that listens to the show knows that. So I was glad to hear it. I kind of thought it was between the two of them. You know, back-to-back winners of the ML Manager of the Year doesn't happen very much in Snicker's case, and sometimes you don't want that to happen. But, I think it was an honor. I love to see the praise heaped on him afterwards as well. You know, some of the pictures with some of the staff and what he means to the staff and some of the players, what he means to them. And I always kind of like to see those things. You know, it's one of those situations where the revolving door that they have in Milwaukee, Council's probably going to be a candidate every year. So, I think it was a good win. I think it was a well-deserved win. I mean, the thing that a manager controls, look defensively at the difference that made. You know, last in league defense last year to first this year, quite a bit of difference. And that's complete protocol change by the manager group, and that says a lot.
Well, and I think, you know, you saw the relationships are different. There was a picture that was out a couple days ago of Schilt having dinner with Dexter Fowler, and they were celebrating
his really win, stands out.
And the managerial win, and you know, Fowler had a cake for him and everything, and that's just, that would not have happened under the prior manager. I mean, that's just the way it is. And I guess there's possibly some people in that clubhouse that are not necessarily big Schilt fans, although I haven't heard anybody say that, or nobody seems to indicate that. But yeah, I think that is part of it, is that he's been able to manage the clubhouse to the point that everybody seems to be on the same page, whether they're getting the playing time they think they should or not. They seem to at least understand the reasoning behind it, even if they don't agree with it. And that's fine. I mean, I think that's us as fans, we have that too, right? It's like, that's what we've said so often about Schilt. It's like, I don't know that I would have done this. I don't know that I agree with what he does, but we could see why he's doing it, because he's laid it out a little bit more about, this is what I'm thinking, you know, this is what I expected. And, you know, he's also honest enough to say it didn't work out. And so I think that's got a lot to it. I think that, you know, there's probably some of that is the Cardinals clubhouse was better, and the media have kind of noticed that as well. But, you know, getting a team like the Cardinals back into the playoffs after 3 years out, it's going to get you a lot of votes and a lot of support. And it was enough for Schilt. So that's great. And congrats to him. Finally, I guess the only other Cardinal thing in the news is not necessarily just Cardinals, but the Hall of Fame voting is starting. The ballot is out. There are four people on that ballot that have Cardinal ties. Two of which is Raphael Furcal and Brad Penny. I don't think we have to discuss too much, especially Brad Penny. I think the only thing I remember out of Brad Penny is the fact he hit a grand slam and pulled his side lat type thing. Anyway, and he was out for months. I can't even remember what that was now. Anyway,
yeah,
you know what I'm talking about. And then Raphael Furcal, who obviously had more of an impact in St. Louis, but again, not a guy that's going to get any serious Hall of Fame consideration. But then you have Scott Rolen and Larry Walker. Walker, who obviously, again, only in the Cardinals for a couple of years, but I think he made an impact as well. And then Scott Rolen, already a Cardinal Hall of Famer, and I think deserves a lot of discussion. So, do you think either one of those guys, you know, obviously Derek Jeter is the big name on this one, but it does feel like the ballot is cleared up a little bit. Do you think either one of those guys gets, you know, Walker's in his last shot, but either one of them get a chance to go to Cooperstown? Yeah.
Well, since Walker's in his last year, you can tell that there is an agenda right now to try to get him in, and I like that because I think it deserves it. He's very underrated, but he's underrated because you know he played at Coors, and that's going to hang over a lot of guys. Rolen, I think, deserves a good portion of the vote. Best third baseman in the league for several years, and I'm really bad about these because I play a lot of emotion into these votes, and they can get broken down so easy to where, there's so many numbers out there now that it shows how good some of these players are, which sometimes I butt my head, I butt heads with that mindset, but it's almost a losing battle because the technology is great and it shows, where guys actually are. I feel like Rolen is deserving. I'm not sure where that's going to go. You're right. There is going to be, Jeter is going to be so polarizing on these votes that I'm not sure whether that helps or hurts Rolen, because it's funny. Jeter's one of those guys to where he was the best shortstop over a 10-year period, but in those 10 years, he was never the best shortstop in a single year. You know what I mean by that? And I wonder if Rolen's not going to – if that's not going to bring a little attention to Rolen, because I kind of feel like you could probably say the same thing about him, which I could argue that he was the best in several years. So I don't know. I think that there's probably a pretty good chance with Walker. Rolen, I don't know, but I would like to see that eventually happen.
I think it'd be really – I don't see that Rolen gets in this year because he's starting from he only had like – 15. I mean, he barely made the 10% cutoff last year. So the idea that he's going to jump 60 something points and get in is probably not likely to happen, but I could easily see him getting into the 50% range and then kind of in a couple more years, getting a little bit closer to making it in because I mean, you were saying that
early.
Got it.
Go ahead. Go ahead. No, go ahead. I'm going to complain, but go ahead. So,
I think that you were talking about him not, the range and how he may have had a few other people with him, but boy, 2004, it'd be difficult to think that there was anybody better.
I agree. I completely agree. The
way he played on that team. And, again, I've never seen a guy play third base like Scott Rolen has. Arenado's getting close probably. But it's not just the glove. I mean, he had a very significant bat.
Middle of the order bat his whole career.
Yeah. And full. So, for me, I look at this ballot and I'm like, I don't know who I put into the Hall of Fame just because to me, especially growing up, Hall of Famers were like this big, huge thing. And like, man, I watched all these guys, they were good, but are they, Hall of Famers? But I think when you look at the standards that they set, you look at their whole body of work, I think that there are some of those guys in there. and Roland should be one of them. Again, I don't know. I don't figure he will be this year, but you know, I think he's going to hopefully get some of that groundswell, some of the stuff that we're seeing with Larry Walker, and some others that are getting a little bit better their due. And people will take a look at it, because, you know, it's like Jim Edmonds should have been still on the roster. He should have stayed down there more than one year. And hopefully that, you know, as some of the older guard are rolling off, you're going to see a little bit more of that as well. Somebody taking the whole statistical picture into account.
Yeah. It's funny. Some of the early returns on some of these Hall of Fame postings are frustrating, because there's several Jeter only at this point. Some guys are dropping Bonds and Clemens and all them. And I'm indifferent about that. You know what I mean? I really don't have a good argument about that era. I know what I saw on the field, how good the players were. I don't know how much enhanced they were, but they were still the best players in the game. So I'll stay away from that one. But yeah, the voting process still needs to be tweaked. I don't know if it's ever going to be perfect. Well, it'll never be perfect. I mean, that's just how it works. But it's easy to watch those and just get frustrated with it and say, well, you know what? Player A deserves this, player B deserves this. You know, there can be a hole in every argument made. So yeah, it's one of those to where it's almost kind of like white noise for me until it gets a little bit closer, just to see, because I think of some of those ballots posted are for more clicks than anything, and that's frustrating.
Yeah, I'm looking at the Hall of Fame tracker that Ryan Thibodeau puts up, if you follow him at Not Mr. Yeah. Tibbs on Twitter, and so far 5 public ballots, and Roland's on one of them. So at this rate, you know, at least he's staying on there.
Yeah.
You know, and yeah, so far Jeter's at unanimous, but you know, a little hard to tell from 5 ballots what's going to happen there.
You know, I'd like to see Walker. I want to see Roland stay on the ballot, but I'd really like to see Simmons get in.
Yeah.
On the veterans ballot. That's kind of how I feel.
Yeah, that would be nice. I think that he should be there.
Completely agree.
So, and I think there's a good chance that he does this year. It seems like there's a lot of positive support out there for him on good. That. So, yeah. All right, well, let's talk about our own award voting then. Let's go ahead and shift on over to the Cardinal Blogger Awards. This is broken into 2 different sections. There's the player awards, which we talk about the stuff that happened on the field, and then we get into the media portion of it. And the media, I say media / bloggers / podcasters, all that kind of stuff, as we honor those that, you know, honor our peers to some degree, and let them have a little moment in the sun as well. I have to go see what I actually voted for, but
And then I'm in a blind ballot, essentially. I know I'm having trouble with this. I'm like, man, let me try to recollect the best I can.
Yeah. So let me, let's just start out. I'll just kick this up while I'm fiddling around here. We'll go ahead and start with the first, award. And that is player of the year, the 3. And again, in any of these awards, there is an option to write in somebody at the end of it. But there are also nominees on pretty much every award. And the nominees this year for Player of the Year are Tommy Edman, Paul Goldschmidt, and Colton Wong. So, Alan, what you want?
I voted for Wong because I felt like he made the biggest jump, and kind of he was probably – I felt like he was not only the Gold Glove, the bat has started to come around to what we expected it to be. I think that we've kind of started to see the makings of going to be a top of the lineup type guy. I honestly felt like you could put Goldschmidt in there pretty easy and not get a lot of arguments. His power numbers were there. I felt like there was a big portion of the season that just a few more hits in those you know, second, third, first and second, 2-out situation, then that's probably a slam dunk. His overall OPS wasn't where it normally is. I think that probably bounces back this year. But Wong got my vote this year because I feel like he truly deserved it.
Yeah, Wong seemed to have the best overall season, I think, overall with everybody. I mean, he obviously won the Gold Glove and definitely was defensively strong. His offense was there. I think we saw the best of what we could see out of Colton Long. Mm-hmm. And let me, and I think Bernie put it out there this year, and there is a little, I think he's downgrading Colton a little bit, but there is a little bit of truth to it, to the fact that if your best player is Colton Long, then you have issues. And there's something to that. I mean, Colton was good, but when you've got Paul Goldschmidt and Marcelo Ozuna and, well, maybe especially those two guys.
Yeah.
If Colton Wong, who's, you know, probably only hitting, you know, 10 homers and 270, 280, you know, whatever, great defense. But if that's your best player, then there's something a little bit wrong.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah.
But, I did. Yeah, go ahead.
No, I did not take that. I agree. Anything that Bernie says like that's easy to poke holes in. That is one that I actually agreed with him on. And it was one of those to where no knock to Wong and really no knock to the Cardinals. It's just one of those to where if that – you, when you look at player of the year, you're immediately going to look to offensive numbers. That's just how it goes. You know what I'm saying? We can break it down with all around game, and obviously we have, because we're putting in a lot of weight into, you know, Wong defensively, which, yeah, he won the Gold Glove, but Goldschmidt may have been just as important defensively to the overall ball club of the Cardinals. But I agree with that. It's one of those to where, yeah, you bring up Ozuna and Goldschmidt. I mean, you can very well said Carpenter. You know, those are the guys that you expect to be the team MVPs just right. because of power numbers alone. And when you have those three names on there, and then it's Wong. I mean, for an NLCS team, I feel like we kind of throw him under the bus a little bit. But I could see where he was coming from with that.
Yeah. All right. Our second award is Pitcher of the Year. Nominees are Jack Flaherty, Giovanni Gallegos, and Dakota Hudson. Alan?
If this isn't a landslide, I'll be surprised, but it was Flaherty. Flaherty took that next step in the second half of the season last year to where, you know, the second half alone got him Cy Young votes. And he was not only the best pitcher on the team, he was arguably the best pitcher in the NL Central, and that says a lot. So let's just hope that that train keeps going in the right direction and he doesn't get hurt.
I agree. Flaherty was the choice there, although Gallegos did have a pretty remarkable year. When you're coming out of the bullpen, you have to be, you know, you either have to have no good starters or you have to be really dominant to win an award like that. And Flaherty was remarkable down the stretch. He was you know, pretty good in the playoffs. You just think he finally, you know, took that step, that made that adjustment, whatever it took, to get him to that next level. And again, well, hopefully we're not going to see him throw a whole season of under one ERA ball this coming year, but, you know, we're going to see how well he can continue that as the league starts to look at him. Yep. And the league starts to look at him differently now. I mean, there's a chance for Jack Flaherty to get up in that Kershaw, Bumgarner, you know, that idea that, boy, this guy goes out there, you're probably not winning.
Yeah,
you know,
sure.
And you know, you got to take it. That's, he could be in that era at some point in time, and whether it's next year or the year after. But he made a real big step on that in the second half.
Well, it's funny. I was thinking back on whenever doing my ballot and going through the votes and stuff like that. I remembered. There were several starts like this, but this has stood out to me just because we were there. I went to an afternoon game in May when he started against the Phillies, and it was really funny because the showdown was great. It was a pitcher's duel through five, and I mean, Flaherty was dominant through five, just dominant, you know, first two times through the order, essentially. And then the sixth inning, the wheels just came off, and that seemed to happen a lot to him this year. And you just thought, okay, if we get over that next hurdle, he could be pretty special. And I felt like in San Francisco that kind of happened. And I think there's several factors played into that. It was because if you remember, Samardzija pretty much matched him that day.
Yeah.
And it was one of those things where I always factor this into that one right before the break. Sometimes you're swinging a little early in the count because you're ready to catch that plane to take your week off. You know, I felt like that played into it. But, boy, that was a confidence boost to him. I mean, he just didn't seem like the same pitcher. You know, he closed things out the rest of the season, and it was impressive to watch. And that growth was really, really cool to watch.
All right, game of the year. We have the March 29th game at Milwaukee where Goldschmidt hit three home runs. We have the June 21st game against the Angels when Albert Pujols came back to St. Louis. We have the July 19th game at Pittsburgh when DeJong hit three home runs. We have the September 3rd game against the Giants where Flaherty threw one hitter through eight innings. And then we have the September 21st game at the Cubs where Molina and DeJong go back-to-back off Craig Kimbrell to take the Cardinals from down one to up one in the ninth inning. Alan?
I was afraid that I would be guilty of recency bias on this one, but I really don't care. But that series in Chicago all together was so special. And I felt like that was great theater all around. And I loved it with DeJong and Molina just because I love those two guys. And for those guys to do that off Kimbrel when they thought they had had that game won was special. That got my vote. I battled back through a lot of them. The three home run games, I love DeJong, and you know what I mean? So just about got my vote. But to be honest with you, that whole four game set was almost like the highlight of the year, you know. And that game was just that Saturday afternoon game was amazing.
Yeah, it's tough to go against it. That's what I went with as well. You know, easily could have been that Flaherty game. Flaherty only gave up one hit in both of the games he played against the Giants this year.
Yeah. And it's one of those, I kind of deadpan that one, and it was special. But, you know, that series just meant so much to me in Chicago.
Yeah, it's tough to, I mean, for dramatics, it's tough. And that's, you know, when we think of game of the year, we think of dramatics to some degree. We don't think of a game that the Cardinals won 2-0 with, you know, just a couple hit, you know, just a mid-May game that, you know, there wasn't anything to it, but it may have been the best game they played all year, you know, but we don't think about that. We think about the dramatics, and that's fair. I mean, that's what we think about.
Here's what those dramatic moments mean to me. Like Jairo Munoz home run off Vasquez to beat the Pirates. Mm-hmm. You know, midweek game, big win for them, scored five in the ninth to come back and beat them. That stands out to me. I mean, I still think of Munoz as a home run hitter from that. You know, that's how much those kind of dramatic moments mean.
Yeah, they definitely – and when you sit to put the list together at the end of the year, then those are the games that stand out enough to make it on the list.
Yeah, exactly.
There's that. All right, surprise player of the year. The nominees were Dexter Fowler, Giovanni Gallegos, and Colton Wong.
You know what? As far as the surprise go, I felt like that you were going to get some bounce back by Fowler. You know, and it's arguably that the bounce back wasn't as significant as it was, but I felt like Fowler did enough to Fowler does enough things to make the ball club better, and he fits in well, but when things fall apart for the whole team, some of the things that he does doesn't, you know. He's a big walk guy, and that's – long story short, I did not pick Fowler. Wong, I felt like this is expected. He finally – the growth. It was crazy, though. I remember last year, right after Gallegos came over, and Rusty Groppel and I were talking about that, and he talked about – the strikeout ability of Gallegos. And then it was one of those, I was like, that'd be interesting to see. But, man, he was dominant out of the pen for a portion of this year. That was my vote. And I felt it was actually – it's one of those votes to where you hit the nail on the head to where Flaherty was so far and above everybody else that you kind of forgot how dominant Gallegos was. And this was kind of my way of paying that back a little bit to where it's like you're going to – you know the best pitcher on the team. But the second best pitcher team may not have been as far back as the vote's going to indicate. So Gallegos got the vote on this for me, and he did surprise me quite a bit because I just didn't realize that the ability that he had, and he lived up to the billing.
Yeah, I think that was the thing. We knew he could be good. I don't think we expected him to be this guy that was all of a sudden the guy, you know, the key guy in the bullpen that would shut things down in the middle, in the sixth or seventh or whenever it may be. You know, for a while there this year, I mean, he was like, he'd come into bases loaded situations for like, he had like 9, 10, 11 times maybe that he'd had bases loaded and nobody had gotten a hit. I mean, that was big. He did fade a little bit down the stretch somewhat because of use that he'd had. It's a longer season, but yeah, it was really, really interesting to see him take that, to become that kind of guy, and we'll see if he can continue it next year.
Not, I know that we're kind of short on time, but I do want to bring this up though. How much of Gallegos' season? I felt like Andrew Miller was brought in to have that role that Gallegos took over this year. How much was Gallegos' success? How much did that overshadow Miller's struggles?
Maybe. Although, you know, they never really used Miller. Even early on, they didn't really use Miller. Like, they seemed to kind of settle him into that eighth spot a lot faster than I would have thought.
But, in the fireman role, I guess, yeah.
Yeah, and that allowed for Gallegos and Brebbia and stuff to kind of be the, you know, we're as needed type of guys. But yeah, probably, although it also put somewhat into relief the Miller struggles, because it was like, we've got Gallegos here doing this job for 500 and something thousand millions of dollars for Miller to come in and blow what Gallegos just did. So there's some of that. Disappointing player of the year, as we transition pretty easily here. The nominees were Harrison Bader, Matt Carpenter, and Andrew Miller.
I wasn't overall disappointed in Miller, and you could take that one out pretty quick. I eliminated that one pretty quickly. I debated on the other two. And I came down to Carpenter just because I felt like a big bat that didn't – I felt like they counted on him a heck of a lot more than they did Bader's bat. Bader's one of those situations to where I feel like his offense is pointed out so much more when the overall offense is terrible. And I put a lot of that on Carpenter's shoulders. You know, those middle-order guys that don't bounce back and don't produce, and it seemed like the lineup was in flux for a lot of the year, just trying to A, get him going, and B, just, you know, not getting him playing time. You know, you essentially had to bench him for the second part of the season, which is kind of tough, but you know, Edmund proved worthy. So I picked Carpenter on this one, just because I feel like he — this is going to sound stupid, but I felt like he meant so much more to the team this year than Bader did. I feel like you could probably live with some of Bader's offensive struggles with how well he did defensively, but if the whole lineup is struggling, there's going to be a pretty big spotlight on you. So I actually selected Carpenter on this one.
Yeah, I think, you know, Carpenter had come off of a, you know, almost MVP season. I mean, you know, we knew that he had struggled at the beginning, he struggled at the end. Knew that he would take a step back, did not expect him to be, but I don't think we expected him to be a guy that lost his job to Tommy Edman either. And I think that was the biggest thing. He struggled a lot. Now, Harrison Bader, I think we expected a bit of a comeback from that. You know,
what's your dog's vote?
Huh?
What's your dog's vote?
Yeah.
He's really passionate about something.
I guess so. I don't know what's going on in there, but playing each other, I guess. Anyway, Bader, I did expect Bader. I think there was some idea that Bader was over his head last year, or the league would catch up with him. I don't think we expected him to slump off as much as he did, but the idea that he was being presented as this kind of face of the franchise type of thing was very premature, it felt like, at the time. So, yeah, I went with Carpenter as well. Rookie of the year for the Cardinals, Tommy Edman, Ryan Helsley, Dakota Hudson.
I surprisingly went with Hudson on this one. Maybe not surprisingly, I don't know. I know that there was a part of the season where I just didn't think that I made a comment to some friends probably about mid-May just to be like, hey, I don't know if Hudson's done enough to maybe stick around at this point. I'm not very impressed. And after that, I know there was a bit of batted ball luck that went his way and stuff like that. But he did become a starter that, you know, that would keep you in the game for a good portion of the season. And he stuck. He was in the rotation all year. That was big to me. You know, Edmund's an electric player, and I really like him. But Hudson got my vote just because of the longevity this year. And I felt like he was better than advertised. I feel like we kind of picked apart the things that he did a little bit. But, you know, and honestly, he was a very productive back-end starter for, you know, a guy that's a rookie.
Yeah, I think that, you know, the idea that he's a number two isn't going to be there. I don't hope nobody's actually there. I didn't like a lot of his underlying numbers, and I have a feeling that there's a regression coming next year. But I can see that. I mean, you're right. I mean, he won a lot of games, and he kept them in the ball games, and definitely made some sort of adjustments after a terrible April. So you got to give him credit for that. I went with Edmund because he did seem to spark the team.
Agreed. I do agree with that.
The team got out of that May doldrums a little bit when he came up. And, you know, if it wasn't for him, and you're playing Carpenter every day, and they probably don't make the playoffs if they play Carpenter.
Yeah.
And so that's, I went with that. I really am a little surprised you didn't go with Ryan Helsley just because.
Oh, well, you know, I mean, he'll have his rookie status next year, maybe. I mean, I don't know. So, no, I agree with you on Edmund, though. That's kind of what I battled back and forth on, is the fact that I felt like even a bad offense, I felt like they did take off offensively when they put Edmund and Fowler at the top, just because I think there was a little bit more electricity and more, a little more creativity when they were able to do it. And, you know, Edmund's one of those guys that, I mean, he exceeded where I thought he would be, you know, to where I'm kind of a believer. You know, I kind of think that he's going to be a huge part of the ball club last year. But yeah, to me, it means a lot when those guys answer the bell. That's kind of why I went with Hudson. You know, that's you're probably splitting hairs on the two, but I do like the fact that he was in the rotation all year.
Makes sense. All right. Acquisition of the year, and I think this is the biggest slam dunk we've got, even more than Flaherty, I think. Acquisition of the year is Paul Goldschmidt, Alberto Mejia, and Andrew Miller.
Yeah, it's Goldschmidt for me. As much as I like Miller, you're at a backside of the career type deal, and there's a lot of mileage on that arm. But Goldschmidt, it's funny to where I think all of us were a little disappointed in Goldschmidt this year in his first season in St. Louis, and I think that played a lot to it, the new surroundings and whatnot. But you know, his numbers still, power numbers look great. And what he meant to that infield, it's probably understated no matter how we say it, that what he meant to, because he made a good infield great, or maybe a terrible infield good. I don't know how you want to look at it. I feel like they were better than what they were perceived anyway. But yeah, it's Goldschmidt to me. I still think Goldschmidt's a superstar. I expect a big bounce back this next year from him after having another year under his belt. And, you know, I'm a huge fan anyway.
Yeah. I think that, you know, and I think that also points just to the lack of movement by the Cardinals to some degree, because, you know, Goldschmidt and Miller were both gotten, you know, this time last year, pretty much beginning of December, I think before they were done shopping. And Mejia was that little, you know, little addition there in the middle of the year that lasted about a week. And that was really about it. I don't think the Cardinals were doing anything else. And so, you know, there's some years there's a lot of people here, but that's not the case. And I don't know if that says about the front office. Well, I guess you take that for what it's worth. Last of the player awards is the most anticipated Cardinal, the Cardinal that has yet to make his major league debut. And that is Dylan Carlson, Nolan Gorman, or Jake Woodford.
This was one that if you would have asked me start of the season last year, maybe start of spring last year, you know what? I would be willing to say maybe start of the season last year. I would have surprisingly said Woodford, because I felt like the innings he was getting in spring, the talk that we heard behind the scenes a little bit, I felt like they thought he may be a player player in the big league level at some point this year. I loved the Carlson smoke. I was fired up about it. You could tell they were really impressed what he did in spring. And I think there was may have been more talk about him breaking with the big league ball club than we maybe realize. Whenever I saw Carlson in Tulsa when he came through with Springfield, boy, he was an impressive hitter. I was like, wow. I was like, he's, you know, he's advanced. I don't know how long he's going to be in Double A, but when I saw him play center field, I was like, you know, he is he's an outfielder that's going to play a little bit of center field. And I thought, he's maybe miscast out there a little bit. I wasn't sure. I did see some misplays, but then I saw some athletic plays that I'm not sure how many other guys would make. flipped the script about a month and a half later when he came back through, and he made some great plays, and he completely looked like a center fielder. That all of this together, and he is far and outweighed what I ever thought Woodford would be. And I know that's probably it's kind of ignorant to say now, but my anticipation, highly anticipated enthusiasm toward Carlson is high. And I'm really looking forward to see what he does in spring. And that may change a lot of the narrative on what becomes of the 2020 outfield.
Yeah, you know, I mean, if he's the official prospect of the blog, it's obviously the Dylan Carlson for me. So very interested. And, you know, again, it could be as early spring as opening day next year. Probably going to be later than that, but you never know. So it's going to be very interesting to see, because the talk on him has gotten so strong over the last year that you kind of expect him to be an all-star in his career, not necessarily next year. But and that's better than the Cardinals have developed. I mean, you know, you got to look at probably what Stephen Piscotty is, one of the better hitters that they've developed so far in the last few years. And Carlson has a chance to be better than that. So that's great. All right. We'll switch over to the media awards. And our first one is what we're calling this year the Joe McGrayer Memorial Award. It's what we've called the best individual blog in the past. But our member, Joe McGrayer, who wrote at Cardinal Red Baseball, passed away this last summer due to cancer. So we renamed the award to honor him. But the nominees for that are Baseball Geek in Galveston, Bird Law, C70 at the Bat, Cardinals GM, MLB Voice, Retro Simba, View from the Cheap Seats, and Women Who Love Cardinal Baseball. Alan, got any picks?
Yeah, no, it was a split in hairs because the guys, I root everybody on there. I think that you do a great job and put a lot of effort into it. I went with Bird Law this year because I find myself that, and I do it on our shows, taking a lot of their information and putting it onto our podcast. And you know, no offense, I think you've gotten my vote every year until now, but I really like the work that Rusty and Adam put in, and I think that the four of us are kind of a good mind. You know, I think we bounce off each other well.
Well, and I put it under individual blog because really Rusty's the only one writing there. Rusty and Alan Adam do the show, which I saw just had its season preview is out. So if you haven't subscribed to the Bird Law podcast, go over there and check it out because it is good. I haven't had a chance to listen to it yet, but I have downloaded it. And that's who I went with as well. Rusty wrote a lot of good stuff this year. It's a lot of interesting things, a lot of detailed things.
Put a lot of work into it. You're right. They put a lot of work into it.
So had to go with that. You know, I think maybe the first year I haven't voted for a retro sim, but Mark Tomczyk does a heck of a job with the historical thing.
Exactly.
But I really did appreciate what Rusty's done. Best team blog. Birds on the Black. Cards blog. Redbird Nest in Korea, Redbird Rants, STL Hat Trick, and Viva Albertos.
I went with the Birds on the Black this year just because I felt like some of the output wasn't as high for Cards Blog. I really respect a lot of the participants with Birds on the Black anyway. And, you know, that you throw in GIFs, you know, involved in that too. And it's a good blog to read. And you couldn't go wrong with anybody.
Yeah.
A lot of good baseball content comes from Cardinals fans, I will say. I mean, I check some of the other stuff around Major League Baseball. And you know, of course, I'm biased, but I think that there's a lot of good Cardinals content that comes out.
Yeah, I think so as well. All right, best media coverage. And there's a lot of plenty good media coverage as well. Derek Gould, Benjamin Hockman, Jennifer Langosh, Bernie Mikulas, Rob Raines, Ann Rogers, and Mark Saxon were the nominees.
I am a Saxon fan. I know that he kind of gets picked on a little bit. I was splitting hairs between Gould and Saxy this year. I went with with Saxon, just because I'm an athletic subscriber. I believe you are as well. You know, it's tough to beat Gould though. I know that he can be a little bit surly, but, yeah, he seems to have the pulse on the ball club, but I kind of like the liberty that Saxon has with some of the personal stories that he could write, yeah. You know, and he was willing to take a trip to the great state of Oklahoma for some research this year. So
I went with Gould because you're right. It's just, I mean, there's so much that Derek puts out and he's kind of the, you know, he's taking that when you're writing for the paper in St. Louis, that is kind of that job. And he puts out, you know, with the chats mm-hmm. And Twitter and yeah. You know, if there's information, he's probably got it out there first or real close to it. So yeah, I went with him. You're right. The attitude can be there a little bit much sometimes, but, I will say one guy I should have put on here and I didn't. And if it had been written, it would have been fine.
Yeah.
Jeff Jones.
Sure.
And it just blipped writing that in. I should have done that. So, cause Jeff did, he's worked all year long and did some good stuff for different areas. I think different outlets, but
yeah, he works hard and he gets stuff out. That was one of those I'd considered write-in vote. And I know, I mean, sometimes I feel like we pull for the guys that get on the show with us, but, Jeff's a good guy and works really hard and puts out some good content. He also does some things that Saxon does to where he gets a little bit personal with some of the guys, which I appreciate.
All right. Post of the year, these were submitted by the authors. I solicited them because there's no way trying to keep track of who's written what all year long. It just isn't for me. So I don't always read everything. So we get the bloggers. They can nominate their top post, what they wanted to. And these are the ones that were nominated. You will find links in the, if you go and vote, there are links at the top of the page for you to click on and read these posts before you vote if you wish to do that. Post of the year was, nominees were, How the Cardinals Browns Discriminated Against Black Fans. That was Mark Tomasik from RetroSympathy. There was The Issue of Matt Carpenter. That was mine. Oh for a Song is Diane Schultz from Women Who Love Cardinal Baseball. And then On Deck's Mental Illness and Moving Forward by Brian Swope in the Cards. Alan, did you have a preference on any of those?
Well, I did. I went with Mark's on that one because I like the historical outlook on that. I chose his. The one that probably meant the most to me was yours, just because of it was pretty eye opening on some of the things that you unearthed on Carpenter. But I'm a history guy, and I really liked what Tomasik brought on that one. And you are right, you know, his blog is great on some of the historical outlooks on you know, St. Louis baseball.
Yeah, I went with Brian's post because I felt like just looking through it, it was one that was you know, a little bit more personal, a little bit more open, and some of that it stands out at times because we do often write a lot of, you know, we're writing about facts and figures and things like that, and we don't always take into account the people and the things that go along with that. So I went with his, which I thought was good, but all of them are pretty good except for the one I wrote, which was not too good, even though all right, the best UCB podcast. There's so many podcasts out there that we split a bit into two categories, ones that are really members or active with the United Cardinal Bloggers and ones that aren't. So these were the nominees for the best UCB podcast. That would be Bird Law, Bird Seeds, Chirps, Gateway to Baseball Heaven, Meet Me at Mutual, and Prospects After Dark. Alan?
I went with Bird Law on this one. And this was a tough one for me because I don't get to listen to it as much, but I like the weekly delivery of Chirps. But I don't know. I mean, it's funny. I have to go in and clean out my my storage a lot because I download so many of the podcasts because they're all so good. The Prospects After Dark, I probably need to get into a little bit more, but it being a Sunday night deal, I'm kind of unwinding, getting ready for Monday morning stuff, and I'm not as active on there as I probably should be. But that's what got my vote, but I don't think you can go wrong with any of them.
Yeah, I listen to Prospects After Dark on the audio version because I don't often get around to watching it live. But it's, you know, Kyle's done an amazing job with it for sure. I did go with Chirps because, you know, since I've moved and I have much less of a commute and I don't listen to podcasts as But yeah. It seems like Terps is the one that I won because it's usually 30 something minutes unless Alex gets going. Hi, Alex. How are you? But also, it seems to be one that, you know, kind of I find myself making sure I listen to. And so it's really, really enjoyed Tara and Alex and what they do over there.
Exactly. Well, it's funny that you even bring it up that way as far as time goes, because one of the reasons it gets pushed back on my list is because with Gateway and I've kind of already given something away, but I like to listen to Castor Vince and Justice on the Morning Lineup podcast. I've got an hour commute to Tahlequah every Tuesday morning, and it's before any of the radio shows come on or anything like that. So I like to get one that's close to an hour that I listen to. Well, with that one being short, and with the Justice and Castor Vince being about an hour long, and it kind of encompasses all of baseball, that's the one I would go with. If we had one that was probably more regular at right about an hour to where I could leave my house and get to the hospital in that amount of time, I would probably do that one a little bit more.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, it's timing is, you know, when you can listen to this stuff is always a problem because there's so, like I say, so many of them and you just can't do it all the time.
Well, the non-UCB is a tough one for me, so we can move into that one whenever you're ready.
Yeah. So there's a list of nominees that I don't know that I got them all, but best non-UCB podcast, there's Behind Enemy Lines, best podcast in baseball, Cardinals Overtime, Cubs Cards Cast, Locked On Cardinals, Seeing Red, Scoops with Danny Mac, the St. Louis Cardinals Extras that comes out from MLB.com, Team of Rivals podcast, and Two Birds on a Bat.
The this one was the toughest one for me because best podcast in baseball is really good because they really dive into a lot of things that and answer a lot of the questions that we have throughout the week and what they do it. Now, it didn't seem like it was as regular as it was this year, so that is actually kind of why it lost my vote. I like the regularity of what Danny Mac has on his shows as far as guests because it works perfectly for me because the throughout the season it is always he has. Mo on Mondays, and Mo's really good on that, and that's a good about 15 to 20 minutes into the commute. Then I get to stack on usually the Gould interview that he has from the previous week as well. So I like the fact that I went with Scoops on this one, but because of the regularity of the shows and the guests, I mean it's he has somebody on daily that you could find. It's really good,
honestly. I think it gets a little bit overwhelming because I mean, and one thing with Danny Mac's podcast that I don't get to listen to, I don't do it. He has so many. I mean, he'll have one, two, three a day. Sometimes it feels like, and it's a mix. It's blues. It's soccer. It's, some of the guests are in there. So, I don't always, sometimes when, you hear, oh, Mo was on here and he said something, I might download it and listen to it. I don't get to that one as much. And then when I have to go clean it out, there's so many, there's 70 episodes for me to clean out.
Yeah. Well, and that's, I agreed. I've had to do that same thing too. Like during the season, it's really good because Gould's one usually about every day. So you could stack a Mo and Gould and find out a lot, in here and, especially for the first part of the week, go wrapping up the weekend. So
I went with best podcast of baseball. You're right. Even though he was sponsored, I don't think Derek had it every week this year. They were still pretty regular. I think they're at times, again, there's a little bit of attitude. There's a little bit of, especially when he's on maybe with Frederickson or something else, it's more about, sometimes it's about the writing more than story.
Yeah.
But for the most part, it's a good listen. He's got some interesting guests on there. The only, the one that it was between that and Seeing Red, I listened to Bernie and Will quite a bit. And I like them. I like their show. There are times where I think Bernie picks up a straw man and tries to beat around on it a little bit. Mm-hmm. But for the most part, and they're good and regular too, during the season once a week. And they're, they're the 30, 45 minute run usually pretty well. So they do a pretty good job. Enjoy that. Most of these guys, I've enjoyed listening the times I've listened to Kiefer and his friends on Behind Enemy Lines. It's just a three guys sitting around who knows where the conversation is going to go. Usually has some Cardinals in it. A lot of these are really, really good shows. So if you haven't if you haven't been listening to some of them, you know, search your iTunes, search wherever you're doing for these guys, and give a listen to them.
It's funny because I like the regularity of Seeing Red that they did this year. You know, I did. You could, that's another one that you could stockpile, and that's usually about a 45-minute show. But being in Oklahoma, I don't get as much local. I don't get any local baseball coverage during the off season. So I listen to Bernie just about every morning, and it's funny. You can you hit the nail on the head. You could fill up a philosophy class with the fallacies that this with a straw man fallacy that. That Bernie will bring about a lot of times. You know what I mean? In the mornings. It's really funny.
All right. Award 15 is the only one that doesn't have a nominees, and it's best podcaster, just the actual person in all these shows that you like to listen to the most. So, Alan, you got one particular?
Well, I mean, it's funny. I knew that it's kind of universal, but it's, you know, being on both the UCB and the non-UCB side, I went with Danny Mac, and I felt like that was kind of cheating because he's a professional, but that's the show that I enjoy the most. And I kind of like that regularity that he puts stuff out.
And I went with Kyle because there's nobody that does anything like what Kyle does with Prospects After Dark. But then, I mean, he'll do Prospects After Dark, and it's this manic creative craziness that he does, but then he'll turn around and do like the prospect podcast that he's going to do with the 30-35 that are coming out here next week after Thanksgiving, and it's just it's calm, cool, and collected to some degree. When he's been on with us, he's, you know, he's great about, you know, having lots of good information. He's just so able to do so many different things. So,
Kyle's impressive because the manic and nighttime nature that PAD does is not the, I think it overshadows the amount of work that Kyle actually puts into the craft. You know what I mean? And I mean that in a complimentary way all across the board. The amount of effort that he puts into those prospect lists is impressive.
It really is. So, and I look forward to seeing those coming out next week. All right. So finally, our final award is the best social media game. And it's either Bombs Away or Card Six, or if there's another one, I don't know about it, but those are the two main nominees. Alan, I don't know if you've played either one of them. So if you'd have it, you can
skip it. I have not. It's one of those to where I get jealous because I look at both of them throughout the year and I'm thinking, man, it's fun because people take it. I love competitiveness. You guys know I'm a competitor. You can hear it on these shows, but I don't know if you could go wrong on it. I'm going to go Bombs Away just because of the I don't know. I'm just going to pull it out of the air, and that's the one that I seem to follow the most on there, just because it's kind of a nightly deal.
I went with Bombs Away too because it's, I mean, GIFs and Fish put a whole lot into that. I'm not going to play my own game. So
I know. I gotta feel like we're cheating on this too. That's it's one of those where we'll move along.
All right. Well, that is done with that. Again, we'll have a link out there if you want to vote this weekend. We would love to have you. We've only had we take all the fan votes, all the fan of the listeners, the followers, all those that vote in that, and they add them all up, and we count that as one ballot, and then we take that ballot and we add it to the ballots that the members of the UCB have done. And if you're a UCB member, you probably need to do that because I don't have very many of those yet either. But we'll put all those together. And then maybe in this show, maybe on Twitter, I don't know exactly. We've done it a lot of different ways, but we will announce the winners hopefully next week, maybe that first week of December, depending on how things go and how long it takes us to add all the stuff up. So if you haven't put your vote in, really would appreciate it if you go and do that. And that'll do it for today, this week. Alan and I obviously will not be back with you next Friday because it's a Friday after Thanksgiving, and the last thing you want to do in your turkey-induced stupor is listen to us, although that might help you go right to sleep. So we will be back with you probably that first week of December. We're going to have to get back to our evening recordings as my schedule changes, but we'll have it out there. Just follow us on Twitter. You can follow the Meet Me at Mutual handle. You can follow Alan, AMedlock1, me, C70. You subscribe to the show and you automatically get it. And if you are subscribed or if you listen regularly, we would love to have you rate and review it in whatever podcast place you listen, if they give you that option. I know iTunes does. If you would do that, we would appreciate it, because that means that other people could find us. And we have had a significant upgrowth in uptick, I guess, maybe, in listeners this year, and we appreciate all of you. So until then, that is Alan. I'm Daniel. Good night.
Good night.
Shooter from the belt to the plate. A swing and a miss, and that's a winner. That's a winner. A World Series winner for the Cardinals.